You are tuned to Radio Free Asgard, episode number 59, the only Thor podcast hosted by a true descendant of Odin. Believe it or not. This is Tom Harrison, Chicago, Illinois. Welcome along to the show. And once again, I don't have a lot of news or anything, so we are going to just kind of hop right into the middle of the reviews. And we are back covering the main book of the Walt Simonson Thor after our little diversion into the Baldur the Brave miniseries, though it's a Secret Wars 2 crossover, so yeah, make of that what you will. Though I am pretty excited because we're now coming up to one of the very best Walt Simonson Thor story arcs, so I'm really excited about that now. But before we do that, of course, we're going to have a classic Lee and Kirby issue of Thor. But before we get into the reviews, I have one thing to talk about. Remember last time? We were talking about Baldur the Brave issue 4, and the topic of Shrinky Dinks came up. And I was wondering if that was still available. Well, I just found out, just sheerly by coincidence, one of my cousins posted a picture on Facebook of her young son playing with Shrinky Dinks. So they still exist. Apparently, they're very inexpensive, about 50 cents, and you get a box of like three or four of them in there, and you color them in. They were using colored pencil to color them, so I guess they don't come with a marker or anything. I'm not really sure, but it looks like they were using colored pencil. And I assume that you can still bake them in the oven. I don't know if they use microwaves now or what. I didn't get any details on it, and I really, to be honest, I can't be bothered to actually look it up online, which would be the obvious course of action if I really wanted to know. So, yes, rest assured, Shrinky Dinks still available at probably a dollar store near you. So, without further ado, let's move on with our reviews.
Cross the rainbow bridge of Asgard, where the booming heavens roar. You'll behold in breathless wonder the God of Thunder, mighty Thor.
And we're going to start our reviews this time looking at Thor number 145. Has a cover date of October 1967, retailed for 12 cents. And cover art is by Jack Kirby, inked by Vinnie Coletta. And the cover blurb says, Abandoned on Earth. And it shows a picture of Thor. And he's not dressed in his costume. He's wearing like a t-shirt and skinny jeans. That's what they look like anyway, and beetle boots. And he's standing in the middle of the street because that's what Thor does. And he's standing on his costume. His costume and hammer are laying on the ground beneath his feet, and there's people in the background, and there's this gust of wind kind of whirling around him and this red Kirby crackle crackling around him. So let it suffice to say that New York City streets are still empty of cars and full of people. And incidentally, this issue has been reprinted probably a couple of times, but most notably here in Marvel Masterworks Thor Volume 6. And in the Essential Thor Volume 3. And we open up to the splash page where we have the title of the story, Abandoned on Earth. And of course, the credits. Produced by Smilin' Stan Lee and Jolly Jack Kirby. Embellished by Valiant Vince Coletta and lettered by Swingin' Sammy Rosen. And this issue picks up right after the events of last issue. If you recall, Thor has defeated the evil enchanters, Brona, the lizard guy, and Magnir, the sheep guy. At least that's how I'm identifying them. And their costumes actually look different in this issue, though that's not really much of a surprise. And Thor is turning them over to the police, which seems like a really bad idea to me, even though the enchanters are powerless. And Brona even says, we are powerless now. Thus we must yield.
Heed the words of Thor, evil ones. Since I have resisted thee upon the planet Earth, 'tis here that thou must be punished.
And the police are like, boy, wait till the Sarge gets a hold of these cookies.
They look like refugees from Mardi Gras. But if Thor says they're dangerous, keep them covered.
And Thor tells the police that if their powers return, thou must summon Thor and his fellows. Yeah, I think if their powers return, these cops aren't going to be alive anymore. But
we stand ever ready to do bludgeoning battle against such as they. And even if the God of Thunder were to fall, be thou assured that the stunning Sif and Baldur the Brave would lend their own immortal prowess to the cause of ye who fight for justice.
Cops are like, yeah, thanks, Thor, for offering. I never took much stock in this Asgard bit, but I'll admit one thing. I'd rather have you with us than against us.
And they take the two enchanters off to Earth jail, apparently. And Thor is kind of recapping a little bit of what happened last issue here. Though Brona and Magnir have been duly vanquished, the peril is not yet past. Here on Earth, we be stripped of our Asgardian power, while most regal Odin doth battle the enchanter Forsung. And Sif says, Sif knows no fear so long as Thor stands by her side. And that upsets Baldur a little bit, who's hanging back, and you know, because he has the hots for Sif. And while he's thinking about how, you know, sorry for himself he is, there's a bunch of Earth girls gathered around him. And they're speculating on the costumes, I guess. Is it,
maybe it's all part of some far-out initiation. I don't know what club he belongs to, but I've got to find out where to join.
We then cut back to Asgard, where Odin was fighting the evil Forsung, and we see that Odin has vanquished him. And Odin, who unfortunately looks rather Santa Claus-ish, is standing over the empty armor of Forsung. At least it looks empty here.
Even with the dread power of enchantment which thou didst possess, could not match the regal might of omnipotent Odin. Ho, ho, ho. Thus the challenge is ended. Merry Christmas. Thou hast gambled thy life, and thou hast lost. Both Forsung the Enchanter and that which was the living talisman have perished in the fray. Let the world issue forth. Asgard still stands. Ho, ho, ho. Since time's first dawning, many have threatened the rule imperial, and many more shall be there yet to come. And ever shall their fate be as today. Death to the foes of Asgard! I have spoken.
He picks up the face, the talisman, off of Forsung's armor, and he smashes it with his hand because Odin is a badass. It's like,
the golden realm shall ever endure.
And then he kind of goes off on a temper tantrum, or he's kind of gone a little bit crazy from all this power, maybe. And he's like,
Odin is the power supreme! Odin is the word and the way and the wonder! Let all who live now know them this. Odin is just. Odin is merciful. And yet, Odin is a vengeful liege. Odin is an angry liege. And Odin is now and forever supreme. And woe to him who strays from righteousness. For the rage of the Allfather is truly eternal, and his judgment all-consuming.
And he's yelling and screaming, and he's being silhouetted menacingly against the wall, and the gods are standing there before him, and they look like they're cowering a little bit. They're kind of afraid of what's going on. And we then cut back to Earth, and the jail, I guess, where the two enchanters are being held, and they say, well,
those two costumed weirdos ought to be safe in there. It's a maximum security cell.
Yeah, but what's that noise? It sounded like thunder.
Thunder? How in Sam Hill can...
Hey, look at that. Something's happening in there. And they notice that there's sparks flying around inside the cell. And Brona and Magnir are being consumed by some sort of an energy. And the voice cries out,
Know ye the judgment of Odin. Thou art henceforth banished to the lost limbo of infinity ending.
And they're gone. And the police are like, huh? They're gone. It's not possible. There's no way out.
What's bothering me is, what in blazes are we going to tell the chief?
And we cut back to where Thor and Baldur and Sif are hanging around in Dr. Blake's office, and they're hoping that Odin has come out victorious from his battle, because Thor wants to stay on Earth and be Dr. Don Blake so he can do good to people on Earth. But Sif is like, well, what if your father thinks otherwise? And surely Odin's going to want you to come back to Asgard. And yeah, Thor's like, well, yeah, I really love my dad, but you know, too often in the past I've made him mad, and I don't want to defy him. Thor's argument here is basically, well, I don't want to defy Odin, but you know, I'm a god too, and my wishes should mean something, right? And the face of Odin appears, giant fuchsia-colored face in the office.
Still thy tongue, rebellious one. Not a word is uttered that doth not reach the ear of Odin. Forsung hath been vanquished. Now must Asgard claim her own.
And Baldur gets down on his knee and holds the sword up and salutes Odin and says,
"My liege, the heart, the hand, the very life of Baldur are thine, as ever to command."
And Sif says, "The will of Odin is law supreme. So speaks Sif."
And he goes, "So be it." And he goes fzzt
and teleports them to Asgard. And Odin is going to yell at Thor a little bit here.
"But thou, flesh of my flesh, blood of my blood, still thou dost defy me."
And Thor's like, "'Tis not defiance in my heart, most noble sire, but sorrow. Too long have I dwelled amongst the earthlings. Their cause is my cause. Their destiny must be my destiny."
And Odin's not real happy about that. And he surrounds Thor in this red energy crackle, kind of like what we saw on the cover.
"Then so let it be. On earth shalt thou stay, but without the power of Asgard, without the power of the son of Odin."
And Thor falls down on his face, and Odin's still yelling,
"Thus with these words I do leave thee. Thine hammer hath lost its enchantment. The power of the storm hath left thee. No longer canst thou soar like bird in flight. Only thy strength remains, the strength which is thine own by royal right. So be it."
So even though Odin is being a real dick here to Thor, he's not being a complete dick. And some time passes. It says early in the next morning the janitor comes in. Because, you know, the janitor can just walk into a doctor's office where he has narcotics and all that stuff. So anyway, he walks in and he finds Thor laying on the floor. It says,
"It's Thor, the god of thunder. I always knew he was a buddy of Doc Blake's, but what's he doing there like that? Excuse me, Mr. Thor. Is something wrong?"
"Wrong? Do mine ears deceive me? Didn'st thou ask if anything be wrong?"
"Well, that's right. Say, I better get you some water or something. You don't look so good to me."
"How wouldst expect one to look of one who hath been stripped of godly power?"
And it's like, "You better hang around for Doc Blake to look you over."
"I say thee nay. Even solace such as that has now denied me. That which doth afflict the son of Odin cannot be put to rights by Dr. Blake."
And he's thinking this part. "And so long as my mallet hath lost its enchantment, Thor can become Don Blake no more." So that's kind of a pickle, isn't it? And so Thor is, instead of flying out the window as he would normally do, he goes out into the hallway and he gets on the elevator. And the people on the elevator are very surprised to see Thor there. One of the guys is like, "Say, aren't you? Nah, it can't be." And the woman's like, "It is. Who else would dress that way?" And when some of their guys are like, "Thor in an elevator? This must be some kind of advertising gimmick." And Thor's thinking he needs to start a new life. And from this point on, there is no turning back. And we shift scenes to a very odd sight here. We see what's obviously a circus, and see guy looks like he's obviously the ringmaster of the circus, and he's got this a purple top hat and a green waistcoat, which is covered with black stars, and there's a clown with bald, and he's got orange and black spots and stripy pants, and then they're kind of attending to the strong man who's dressed in your typical Tarzan costume, like a cheetah skin bathing suit with a little strap over the shoulder. The ringmaster is saying, "What's wrong with him? Why isn't he on his feet? You know we cannot execute the plan without him."
"It's no use, ringmaster," says the clown. "He's trained himself trying to lift the elephant. We'll have to find a new strong man."
And the very next day, they're hanging around, and the ringmaster's hanging out in the tent, and the clown is there with them, and he says,
"Is the new applicant ready for his tryout?"
And there's these two acrobat types who come in, and say,
"He's in the arena now, ringmaster, putting on his act. He looks good enough for any ordinary stronger man act. Maybe we were expecting too much."
"Don't be a fool, Gambino. We're attempting the greatest crime, the most daring robbery of the century. And everything depends on having a strong man with enough power to do the job. Let's go look him over."
And there's a strong man type wearing the red superhero diaper and these very 1930s looking strong man leather boots that lace up, that sort of thing. And the clown is there, and this guy is lifting this big old barbell. It looks like it must weigh at least a ton. And the clown's like,
"Not bad, mister, but that's kid stuff compared to what we're expecting of you."
"You don't scare me, clown. Just tell me what to do. If I can't handle it, nobody can."
And the ringmaster says,
"First, you must pass the human cannonball test.
Then if you succeed, you shall face the deadly pet of Princess Python.
And the acrobat says, he's strong, but not strong enough. Princess Python can tell. And Princess Python is smoking a cigarette here. That's something you don't see too much in kids' comics in the 60s, isn't it? She's like,
Gambinos, light the cannon.
And the two acrobats, obviously, they're the Gambinos. And there's a human cannonball, and he's wearing the sort of bullet man looking armor on his head. And they light the fuse of the cannon, and the cannonball's like, within 10 seconds, we will know if we have found the one we seek. And they're like, this is it, strong man. Brace yourself for impact. And the human cannonball shot out and hits the strong man right in the chest and knocks him over and knocks him unconscious. And the cannonball is like, bah, he didn't even pass the first test. Will we ever find the one who can lift the golden bowl? And the ringmaster's like, we must find him somewhere, somehow. Gambinos, toss the puny bumbler out. We've no time to waste with weaklings. We must keep searching till we find the one we need. And then we see the front of the ringmaster's hat for the first time, and it's got this sort of hypno wheel on it. Remember those things that spin and they're supposed to hypnotize you? He has one of those on the front of his hat. Apparently they're going to try to steal this golden bowl, which is somewhere around here. And he's like, we must keep searching till we find the one we need. All that matters is the plan. I'll never rest until the golden bowl is mine. And the cannonball's like, we'll find her, man, we must. And Princess Python is like, ah, my pet is restless. You do not like being cooped up for such a long period of time, do you? It's no fault of yours that none are powerful enough to match their strength with you. Come, I shall let you have your exercise. And Princess Python lets the snake out of its box. And you see the clown background juggling like clowns do. And we have a new applicant for the strongman position shows up. And he's wearing blue, like, windbreaker and blue pants and a hat. And it turns out to be Thor. And he's saying out loud, dressed in this fashion, I would arouse no undue attention. Well, yeah, but running around talking to yourself out loud might attract undue attention. Though my hammer has lost its enchantment, I could not bear to part with it. Thus I shall keep it with me, protected within a carefully wrapped bundle. So apparently he's carrying his hammer. Now if I can manage to speak in the vernacular of... Wait, there's something slithering around my legs. And yes, it's Princess Python's giant snake. And Thor's like, a giant python, moving far too fast for any mortal, without superpowers to escape. Now, am I wrong here, or do pythons normally move fairly slowly? Well, I suppose it could be a super-powered python if you really want to get down to it. But the python has wrapped itself around him. But speed alone will not be the undoing of mighty Thor. Despite all I've lost, still do I possess my strength. A strength that must not fail me now. And he flexes his muscles and he's stretching the snake off of him. And he whips it around and he ties it into a knot. And which is not real good for a snake, I would think. And the ringmaster and his circus of crime, which is indeed who they are. This is their first appearance. The first appearance of a majorly lame Marvel villain. And they're like, look, there's a stranger on the grounds. The python has attacked him. But he's fighting back. He's breaking free of the serpent's grip. Quickly, call the ringmaster, the princess, and the others. And the princess is upset. It's like, enough, release him. You must not harm the pet of Princess Python.
I only seek to ensure that he himself will cause no harm to any man.
And the ringmaster's like, he's knotting the python like a shoelace. And he isn't even breathing hard.
And Python gets like a cattle prod and gets Thor right in the butt with it. He's like,
I warned you to release him. No matter how strong you may be, this electric prod will make you give up the fight.
And in between that panel and the next panel, she has changed her hair completely. Really completely. So we get a full-page splash here of, you know, the ringmaster and, of course, the Gambinos and the human cannonball and the clown and Princess Python, and they're introducing themselves.
I am Princess Python, the greatest snake charmer on the face of the earth. Behind me are the great Gambinos, the human cannonball, the crafty clown. And standing at my side is the ringmaster.
And the Gambino's like, it looks as though you found the one you've been waiting for, the ringmaster. Anybody who could free himself from the python that way has to be what we need.
That remains to be seen. First, I must make sure it wasn't merely a lucky fluke. On your feet, stranger. We've got a little test for you to wrestle with. And Thor's like, a test?
And Thor's not. He's making a shouty face in this picture.
In order to qualify for the job we're offering, you must first prove yourself.
Prove myself? You dare speak so to the mighty Thor?
And the ringmaster's like, hey, that's a pretty good gimmick. With all that long hair, you could call yourself Thor, eh?
And Gambino's like, he should have been an actor of that one. And when I first heard him speak, I could have sworn he actually believed he was a Thor.
And Thor's thinking he has to learn to control his temper because it wouldn't do to actually give up his secret identity, even though, you know, he's not wearing a mask or any kind of disguise. He's just wearing different clothes. And he's saying, yes, I plan to take the name of Thor. See, I even brought a hammer to use in my act. And it's like, a novel idea. And Thor says, it is simple. I'll do just as Thor does. See how I split that pole in half? And he, you know, pitches the hammer at the phone pole. Or I like to say it's a tree, but it's obviously like a phone pole. And he's thinking to himself, although if I still possess the true power of the Thunder God, that one throw would have reduced the pole to sawdust. And now my hammer just lies there instead of returning to its once majestic master.
Which just goes to show that Thor is not only a drama queen, but egotistical as well. And there's these sort of carny people hanging around a little bit here.
Better watch where you toss that thing, Rube.
And the ringmaster's, I like your style, mister. Perhaps we can use you. And Thor's like, to think the enchanted Mjolnir, the mighty Thor, immortal of Asgard, would so soon descend to this.
Before I brief you on your job, there's just one little thing you've got to do.
Name it, then. I will hesitate no longer, so long as it's honest work.
And the ringmaster's thinking, honest? If this simple-minded fool only knew what he'll be getting into. And he instructs Thor to look at his hat. And he says, look at my hat. See the circles whirling round and round? Continue looking. Don't stop for anything until I tell you.
And Thor's like, the circles, do they really move? Oh, I can see our circles. They're spinning faster and faster and faster.
And the ringmaster's like, there, it is done. Now we can prepare the test of the golden bull. He will know nothing. He will remember nothing. We will use his strength, and then we will discard him.
So I guess the ringmaster's ability is something like cosmic roofies.
And they go walking off, and they're walking past this guy with like a drum major hat on, big tall hat. See, he should be part of the Circus of Crime too, but I guess he's not. And Princess Python's like, if he passes the test of the golden bull, we'll all be rich beyond our wildest dreams.
And if he doesn't, we will have to pay the price for failure.
This will truly be the greatest achievement of the Ringmaster's Invincible Circus of a Crime.
And there's another character here walking behind them who I don't recognize. Actually, there's a couple, and one of them is a dwarf.
And I don't recognize either one of them, though maybe they'll introduce them later.
And the Ringmaster's like, you must follow my every command without any question. Now come. The golden bull is just ahead, and explain that this isn't the real golden bull. It's merely a lead casting of the golden bull. And it's like, it's supposed to be the most priceless art object in all the world. And it's sitting on this looks like it's supposed to be a wooden crate, which doesn't make any sense if it's supposed to be made of lead, because it would just crash right through the crate. But okay, anyway. So it's a very crude sculpture of a bull. And Thor takes off his shirt and his jacket and says, I've been ordered to lift this giant-sized statue, therefore it must be done. And the ringmaster's like, that replica is exactly the same weight as the golden one at the museum.
Kind of wonder how he knows that it's exactly the same weight. And Princess Python says,
look, he's doing it. He's actually holding it off the ground. I never would have believed it. And Thor's lifting up this lead statue of the golden bull, and he's commanded to carry it off of the platform and walk 60 feet and put it down, and he's doing it, basically. There's all these other evil... I guess this whole circus is evil, but only, like, there's main evil ones who are part of the superhero group, and all the rest of them are just accomplices or something. I'm really not sure what's going on here. And some of the people are like, that's where the other strong man failed. He collapsed trying to get the bull down the stairs. But look at him. He almost makes the whole thing look easy.
I must descend slowly down the stairs and then carry my inanimate burden exactly 60 feet.
And he's counting off the feet as he carries the bull. And after exactly 60 feet, he puts it down. And the ringmaster's like, now all he has to do is put it down gently without smashing it. It's made of solid lead. He's not going to smash it. Even if he dropped the thing, it wouldn't smash. It's only like 3 feet up above the ground.
Anyway, so Thor puts it down on the ground, and he says, I've done as I was told to do. And the ringmaster is like, excellent, excellent. You passed the test perfectly. Within my hypnotic power, the talents of my circus of crime, and this buffoon's strength, the golden ball is as good as mine. I better snap him out of it now. And he snaps his fingers. Wake up. You must remember nothing of what has happened. And he says, the job is yours, and I will call you Thor. And he's thinking to himself, though it makes no difference what you're called, once you've served my purpose, you will die. And that is the end of this story. So, yeah, so we have the introduction of one of Marvel's iconic second-tier villain groups, the Circus of Crime. Yeah, you know, and I'd say, you know, I actually like the story, as I like a lot of these stories. It's a nicely paced story. It's relatively plausible. They don't really explain Odin's temper tantrum very well. I'm assuming that they'll explain that a little bit more later. I mean, I think that he was driven a little crazy by all that energy and stuff that they were kind of pouring out while he's fighting against Forsung. Now, I did find it really odd that the entire battle with Forsung pretty much took place off-panel. So we know that he defeated him, but they really didn't show how. And that seems a little bit odd to me. Now, all of my enormous affection for these goofy Silver Age villains aside, the Circus of Crime is really pretty dumb. And I don't even know if I want to talk about them. But they do make numerous comebacks over the years in really strange places. It's one of those concepts, I think, that worked really well in 1967, but as time has gone on, it's just become goofier and goofier. Art-wise, this is generally pretty good. I have a feeling that we really don't see the Circus of Crime drawn this well ever again. Because right here, I mean, they're actually vaguely compelling, even though they're kind of stupid. I will point out that this is almost a stereotypical Jack Kirby creation. All these characters are very, very, very Kirby-esque. It's exactly the sort of thing I would expect to see in a Marvel comic if Stan Lee says, okay, well, Jack, you know, this next Thor issue is going to be about Thor, and he loses his powers, and he joins an evil circus. And then just Jack went and drew the whole story and plotted the whole story on his own, and then Stan just laid some dialogue over it. That's kind of how this whole story looks to me. So anyway, we do have a five-page Tales of Asgard backup. So before we move on to the other issue that we're covering, we might as well cover this. And this is the final part of the Merciless Mogul Saga. As you recall, they were fighting against the horsemen, blah, blah, blah. At the very end, Volstagg came in with his giant phallic red weapon, which looks completely different now than it did the last issue, because now it looks like a kind of like a fountain pen handle with a tulip on the end. That's kind of what it looks like. And it could also be some kind of weird vibrator, except it's really, really big. So anyway, so Thor's like, oh, and so they have the title of the story here. It's called The End. This is the end, my only friend. Oh, sorry. Okay. So we have the credits here. Stan the Man Lee, Jack King Kirby, inked by Vinnie Coletta. Artie Simek was the letterer. And so we pick up where we left off last time, and Volstagg has just appeared on the scene and has dissolved the horsemen, and they seem to have moved in the last few seconds, because remember, they were kind of out in the open in a desert-like area where the horsemen are attacking them, but now they're standing indoors, and like looks like they're on a futuristic spaceship or something, and Volstagg's holding the weapon, and Thor's saying, Hail to the valorous Volstagg! Thou hast defeated the 40 horsemen of Satan! And Volstagg is like, Though modesty be my middle name, still do these plaudits please me. This weapon, which I have daringly seized from Mogul's arsenal, hath truly turned the tide. And Hogan actually has his hat off, and we get to see what Hogan's hair looks like, and kind of has like a beetle haircut. And Hogan's like, Now all that remains is the total defeat of the murderous mogul himself. Triumph at last shall be ours. And Fandral is like, With hammer, blade, and mace, we shall now put all to rights. And Alibar is there too. He says, All honor to noble Asgard. Her warriors have achieved the impossible. And we move on to the next page, and getting a little bit more exposition here. Now only Mogul stands between me and the stolen battle standard of my captive people.
We must be cautious, says Volstagg. Mogul wields deadly mystic powers. He is almost the equal of valiant Volstagg. Are those the words of him who knows not the meaning of fear? Fear? Who speaks of fear? Panic, perhaps, but never fear.
I love that line. That's very cute. Very cute. And Alibar hauls out the battle standard. That, remember I said he'd just give it to Hogan? Well, here he's doing just that. And he says, Alibar's like, no matter. If 'tis the battle standard thou dost seek, then here is thine. 'Twas given me by Mogul to flaunt before thee during the attack. The evil one desired it be the final thing thine eyes beheld before his demons vanquished thee. And Hogan's like, by Asgard's golden gates, the price is at last won. With this sacred symbol in my hands once more, my people shall be free.
And Alibar's costume is all ripped to shreds. Remember, he dressed him up in, like, the turban and all that stuff, and that's all got ripped up in the battle.
As for me, I am as I was, clothed in rags. The finery in which I was garbed was but another illusion of Mystic Mogul.
It wasn't an illusion, he had clothes.
And Thor says, I say thee nay. Thou hast the word of Thor. When this quest be finally over, thou shalt be prince of all the realm. Now on to the palace. We do strike for Asgard. And they all shout, for Asgard. And they go running forward.
And we then cut to Hogan's homeland, and the mighty Mogul is flying over it on his flying pillow. It's kind of what it looks like, is a pillow. You remember, it was big and flat before, and now it looks like a sofa cushion. They call him like the silver sofa cushion or something like that. Anyway, Hogan's people are shooting at him, and you know, they're on horseback, and they look very Mongol. I mean, way more Mongol than Hogan does. And so I guess it's a cool, you know, it really can say they even established that Hogan's people were somewhat Asian. And, you know, they had the Japanese guy playing him in the Thor movie, and that seemed a little weird. Maybe not so weird. So Mogul's like, still do the powerless foes seek to slay their mystic master. Within seconds, it'll be too late. Since Hogan and his Asgardian allies have dared defy me, I shall now unleash the most deadly attack of all. And he has this vial here that's full of the spotted plague. He says, once this enchanted potion of spotted plague is spread over Hogan's land, not a living thing shall remain alive. Ha ha ha.
And they show back in Mogul's headquarters, and Thor and the Warriors 3 are bursting into his chamber, and they're finding that he's not at home. And Alibar is like, you know, he's not here, but he left behind his mystic paraphernalia. And they spelled paraphernalia wrong. And Thor's like, to what avail if none but he can use it? And Alibar is saying, not so, Asgardian. Many times has Alibar spied upon the evil one, and thus learned much. There, by making the mystic gesture of Mogul, I cause an image to appear in it. He has a cosmic voyeuroscope that's like this giant ice crystal or something. And Alibar saying, he soars above the land of Hogan, clutching a vial in his hand. But why? For what sinister purpose?
I know it well. 'Tis the potion of the spotted plague. Only a shattering bolt of temporal force can stop him. Do as I command, thou noble thief. Mouth thee precisely the words of Hogan.
And he's like, speak then, grim one, and 'twill be done.
And so Hogan dictates the spell to Alibar, which is really weird because you don't get the sense that Hogan should be able to cast magical spells. I mean, he usually just bashes stuff with his mace and then kind of glowers. But he dictates the spell to Alibar, and Alibar casts it through this cosmic voyeuroscope gem. And he says, thou hast done it, Alibar. Thou hast created an all-consuming, distant-shattering bolt, which naught can survive. And it hits Mogul, and he's like, bzzzt, and Mogul is destroyed, which that seemed a little bit too easy, didn't it?
Alibar's like, though the voice was mine and the hands were mine, the spell was thine, grim Hogan. Mogul is destroyed, and 'tis thou who art the liberator of thy land.
The quest is ended. My people shall ever be free.
Now 'tis time to savor the sweet fruits of victory. The mere mention of food doth make my fearless heart rejoice.
Thor says, though the battle is over, one matter yet remains.
And they cut through the throne room of Xanadu, and Olivia Newton-John is there, and a bunch of people on roller skates. You know, I figure it's the last time I'm going to be able to use the joke, so I might as well get as much mileage out of it as possible. So anyway, they're standing in the throne room, and Alibar has been made the Prince of Xanadu, and he's wearing a fancy, like, kingly costume, and Thor and the Warriors 3 are there, and there's a very, like, Byzantine-looking guard standing there, and Hogan has the standard of his people, and Alibar saying, ever will the heart of Prince Alibar hold boundless gratitude for those who came from a distant realm to bring freedom to this land. From this moment, my people, because they're free now, and thine, are joined by bonds of brotherhood, which can ne'er be shattered.
Ever shall Xanadu echo the ringing words, "Glory be to Asgard! Glory be to Asgard!"
And so Thor and the Warriors Three get on horses, and very happy-looking horses, actually. It looks like they're smiling. And go riding off, and Hogan is there in the lead with his battle standard, and says, "Thus our saga ends, as all such quests must end, with tyranny destroyed, with freedom triumphant forevermore. For so long as there be evil, so long as there be servitude, so too shall there be champions, who ne'er shall rest, till all humanity has reached the promised goal of freedom and justice for all." And that is the end of Thor number 145. And now, this, for at least the time being, is the last of the Tales of Asgard backups. And next issue is starting a series of stories about the Inhumans. Now, I really haven't been planning on covering those because they're obviously not very Thor-related. But I will cover them if people want. So if you want to give me your feedback, let me know. Do you want these little five-page stories of the Inhumans or not? Let me know. The email address, if you want, or if you don't want, is radiofreeasgard@gmail.com. Or you can also join us on the Facebooks and the Radio Free Asgard community. Let us know if you want to hear these stories about the Inhumans. All right, so that's Thor number 145. And, yeah, at least they ended this story. You remember the last one? They kind of rambled around a bit and never really resolved anything. And this, even though it was a pretty long story, they actually did resolve it. And with a nice, satisfying ending as well. Now, you know, considering that they just set up a dictator over these people and are claiming they're free, well, I wonder if Alibar will be back, and I kind of hope not, actually. Anyway, I will say one thing about this whole Mogul story is it does give a little bit of background on Hogan, who is kind of an obscure character in most ways and doesn't really have a lot of background to him. And I'm sure that probably over the years, especially these years when I haven't really been reading Thor on any kind of regular basis, they've probably added a little bit more to the story. But I will say that Jack Kirby was doing some fantastic art, and especially in the beginning of the story, where we had all the incredible detail going on and all these fantastic, really elaborate Asiatic designs and costumes and things. Of course, most of that has gone away by the end. Though we still have some pretty nice art, and even into this story, I think that this story probably had the least good art of all of them, but it's still pretty good. And Jack Kirby, when he's good, is very good. So, yeah, there's not much more to say about it. Generally speaking, this five-page tales of Mogul and Thor and the Warriors 3, I've really, really enjoyed them. All right, so without further ado, let's move on to our second issue that we'll be reviewing. And this issue is The Mighty Thor, number 363. Has cover date of January 1986, retail for 65 cents. Wasn't it 75 cents the last few issues? Did it go down in price? Do I remember that rightly? Yeah, I think it is true. And up in the upper right-hand corner, we have verification that this is indeed a Secret Wars 2 tie-in. Can you tell the chagrin in my voice here? I was not a big fan of Secret Wars 2, but we'll kind of do a really brief recap of that in a second. And on the cover, beautiful cover, incidentally, by Walt Simonson, and we see Beta Ray Bill lying on the ground, unconscious, and Thor is being held up by his cape by this guy in red and yellow and orange armor. And he's got these big spikes around where his mouth should be, and these big old horns. Very semi-futuristic Asgardian-looking armor. And the cover blurb says, "Curse," with a K. "He's the Beyonder's gift to Thor." All right, so I have to go back and kind of explain really briefly who the Beyonder is, because this isn't really explained in the course of the story, because Marvel was doing this huge maxi series called Secret Wars 2. Now, in the original Secret Wars, this omnipotent godlike being called the Beyonder stole all these heroes from Earth and some villains from Earth and sent them to this planet. And basically, they all fought each other for 12 issues. Okay, that's really all you need to know about Secret Wars 1. Now, Secret Wars 2 was much more sprawling and much more involved. And this involved, the basic plot was, the Beyonder was intrigued by what he saw in Secret Wars 1 and having the heroes and the villains team up to escape the Beyonder's world. So he decides to come to Earth
to learn what it's all about to be mortal. And he kind of goes and fucks around with everybody in the Marvel Universe, pretty much. I think every single series was involved in Secret Wars at least once during the course of the, I think it was 8 months or 9 months that this series came out. And I think there were a couple of Thors in there as well. Now, I thought about going back and doing the issue that came immediately before this, which was Power Pack number 18. Decided not to do that, because the only thing you really need to know about this character of Curse is that he was Algrim. Do you remember Algrim? He was the dark elf hero that Thor fought in England. Remember, they had that big arena thing, and he was fighting against Malekith, and he sent his hero Algrim after him, and they were fighting, and then eventually Malekith basically panicked, and he pulled a lever in the wall, and they fell down this giant pit, and Algrim fell into the lava. So, okay, so you remember that? That was back in Thor number 347. So you can go back and listen to that episode of Radio Free Asgard and hear a little bit about that story. Now, basically what has happened here is the Beyonder has brought Algrim to Earth and given him, like, these mega, mega superpowers. So he's, like, two or three times stronger than Thor. Now, he goes up against Power Pack. And these are the same little kids, you remember, from a few episodes ago. And essentially, at the end of it, they drop a building on him, okay? So it seems as though this Curse character has been defeated. All right, so we open up the issue here. So Stan Lee presents The Mighty Thor. We have the credits, of course. Walt Simonson was the artist and the writer on this. John Workman was the letterer. Max Scheel was the colorist. Ralph Macchio, editor. And Jim Shooter was the editor-in-chief. We get a really brief recap here on the splash page about the Beyonder and how he created the Curse. And they kind of start where they left off at the end of Power Pack. They tell the story of the fight, basically. And he walked across the ocean, incidentally, because he hated Thor so much. And what he basically had amnesia, and all he could really remember was that he hated Thor. And he shows up in New York, and one of the first beings that he encounters is Beta Ray Bill. Now, Beta Ray Bill's kind of like Thor, and he mistakes him for Thor because, obviously, this Curse character ain't too smart. And this was in Secret Wars 2, issue number 6. Beats Beta Ray Bill all to hell. And then in Power Pack number 18, he goes up against these little children who manage to trap him under a building. So we open up at the construction site where I guess there's some construction workers kind of surveying the mess. Walt Simonson likes to destroy construction sites in much the same way that Jack Kirby liked to destroy trees. I mean, it really does seem that way. I kind of wonder if this is all the same construction site, if this is like a construction site with really bad luck because every villain in town comes and trashes it. And they notice something stirring in the wreckage, and they're like, "What's that?" And it is Curse breaking free, and all the construction workers go running away. And he's standing up, energy crackling from his hands, and he can't say much because he's not real smart, and he just shouts, "Thor!" And we have the title of the story, This Cursed Earth. And we then switch to elsewhere in New York City, where we have Thor and his chariot, led by his two goats, and they are coming back to Earth through the sort of mystical gateway. Remember, Sif can create these mystical vortexes, and I think Odin, or I don't know, Mjolnir or Odin or somebody created this. It's been too long since I did that issue, so I don't remember anymore. So anyway, Thor and them are back on Earth. And remember, they have these cartloads of human souls that they went to hell to go reclaim. And he's saying that now they can be returned to their rightful bodies, which basically means that these souls are going to dissolve into yellow dust, because that's what happened to their human bodies, if you remember. And if you also recall, Thor is damaged. He has his face was kind of burned by Hela when she touched his face. And so he has kind of wrapped a bit of his cape around. He looks like he's wearing a bandido bandana. And they come through, and he decides to blow the souls away using Mjolnir. So he whirls Mjolnir around at super speed,
to blow the souls away. And you see these wispy faces of things going flying off. And Thor saying, oh, you know, at last, I've finished my duty. Now, not that he actually cares enough to check up on any of these souls. They just kind of go warroom and fly away. And they figure, okay, my work's done now. And Thor is saying how tired he is because of the wounds that Hela inflicted upon his face. And he decides he wants to be alone and reflect on what's gone on. And he says, nowhere better to be alone than in the city. So he decides to find a dark alley to hide his goats and chariot in. And inside the alleyway are some bums. And they're dressed. One of them has like a Miami Vice jacket on. And the bum is like, hey, Matt, got any spare change?
I fear, my friend, that I have no currency of any kind with me, because, you know, Thor doesn't carry currency on him. He doesn't have any pockets.
Hey, Skrip, don't you recognize him? This here's a lousy superhero. Probably been out doing good deeds or something.
We heard about guys like you. You guys are whack, you know that?
Oh, I love the 80s slang.
You're supposed to be helping the good guys, but you always out running with good-looking women and hanging around with the Avengers in that fine, fine mansion. What have you ever done for guys who haven't got two dimes to rub together?
Yeah, what have you ever done for us?
And bums are making fun of Thor. And Thor's getting mad. They say,
why, thou ignorant fools! Who art thou to despise those who have set their lives at hazard to safeguard this world and all those inhabit it? While you slept here in safety, I stood in the halls of death itself.
And he pulls the fragment of cape off of his face and shows it to the bums, and they like ew, look at his face, and they run away. And you kind of see his face in the shadows here, and it looks like is he's been inked in black. It's like he's got ink all over his face or something. I don't know, that doesn't seem that frightening to me. And Thor is thinking how tired he is. All the homeless people have run away, and he's thinking to himself, my father's gone, the executioner is dead, and I carry wounds from which I may never fully recover. In Asgard, my stepbrother Loki doubtless lays his nets to capture the throne of the Golden Realm, and I must endure the insults of those who cannot see through their hate.
But you know, he kind of invaded their space, if you really think about it. I mean, why shouldn't they be mad at him?
Perhaps the time has come at last to forswear Midgard and return to my true home.
Oh, wine, wine, wine. And we then shift scenes slightly, and we see the outline of Curse, and is coming up to a window, and he's looking himself in the window and realizes he's no longer what he once was. Not that he really remembers what he once was. And he gets mad, and he shatters this window, and he shouts, Thor! And we then cut to the streets above Manhattan and the Power Pack. Not so coincidentally being written by Walter Simonson's wife, Louise, or Wheezy. Now, it's the Power Pack is, it's Alex, Julie, Jack, and Katie. And at this point, they're also hanging around with Franklin Richards, who is the son of Reed and Sue Richards of the Fantastic Four. And then Franklin is talking to Alex here. He says,
aren't you worried your dad will find out you guys snuck out of the house, Alex?
Nah, Dad's asleep, Franklin, and I'm old enough to be the babysitter now. And the baby's sitting on Julie's back, so we're okay. How about you?
Jarvis doesn't know how I snuck out to see you guys, but I ought to get back to the Avengers Mansion before too long. Do you really think we'll find anybody the curse hurt when you and guys are fighting?
I hope not. And after I lost my temper during the fight, I'm worried that we might have hurt somebody by mistake. Besides, it won't take long to backtrack along Curse's trail. Then we can all go home.
And they find somebody laying on the ground there, and it turns out to be Beta Ray Bill, though he is in his civilian guise and not his horse face guise. And they kind of land next to him, and they say,
you're right, Jack, and he's moving. Maybe he isn't hurt too badly. Gee, mister, are you okay?
And little Katie's like,
Julie, look, he's not a human being.
And Beta Ray Bill's, you are right, little maid, but fear not. Beta Ray Bill does not number children among his enemies. And in my present condition, I could scarcely win a battle amongst even a baby. I think they should go get a baby to test that theory. And Jack is saying,
hey, I know who he is. He's that guy with a hammer who looks like a fancy Thor. But you don't look like him. Are you telling the truth?
And he explains that this is his civilian identity. and that he only actually survived the fight with Curse because he changed back into this form. They didn't look like Thor anymore. And basically tells the Power Pack, you know, Thor needs to be warned. This guy Curse is out for his blood. And Alex explains that, you know, they just fought Curse and they dumped a building on him and he's got to be dead. And Beta Ray Bill's like, I fear not. So great is his power that I wonder if even Thor and I together could withstand him. Thor must be warned. But who are you children? And they basically explain who they all are. And then we shift scenes to Asgard and to the castle of Loki. And Loki's in his castle and he has a machine called the Cosmic Transmuter, which is kind of interesting. You know, going back to that Jack Kirby tradition of having these super futuristic devices, I guess. And Loki is looking down on Earth and he's kind of spying on somebody who's ironing. I'm not sure who that is, but somebody's ironing. And Lorelei comes up behind Loki and is bothering him a little bit and says, Loki? And he's like, not now, Lorelei. I've begun my most audacious experiment. And he shoots a ray out of this cosmic transmuter thingy towards Earth. And we then shift scenes again to a floating house. I guess it's kind of floating out on the ocean, and it's called the Great Sanctum of the One from Beyond. So this is the Beyonder's house. And he's kind of sitting there, and he's spying on people on his TV sets. He's got, like, a whole bunch of screens set up, and right now he's watching Thor in the alleyway, and Curse happens across him. Or maybe the Beyonder guided him there, because that's the sort of thing the Beyonder likes to do to kind of fuck with people. And the Curse finds Thor. And Thor is still feeling sorry for himself and wondering if all his time on Earth has been wasted. And Curse finds him and then with a Thrakam just smashes Thor. And Thor goes flying and Curse is like, at last, Curse shall slay you and rest. Nay, creature, I know not who you are. And as surely as I avoid your mailed fists, the hammer of Thor shall answer this unwarranted attack. He's thinking to himself that somehow this creature seems familiar. And his movements remind him of somebody who he recently fought, but he can't quite remember. Then it hits him. Though you are greatly changed, no cosmetic cover can deceive the eyes of Thor. Algrim the Strong, is it not? Late of the realm of Faerie. And hearing his name makes Curse stop for a second. He's Algrim? And he kind of is thinking, he kind of half remembers falling into this fiery pit. And he's like, "Arg! Die, Thor, die!" And he starts smashing Thor again. And then we cut to Asgard, home of the gods. And they're kind of this floating rock. And it's, I guess, not really as part of Asgard. It's kind of a floating rock off Asgard, I guess. And we see some children there. And these are our Volstagg's children here. And I guess it's Hildi and some of her male siblings are running around. They're playing tag or whatever. They're racing. And they're like, I'll catch you yet, Hildi, even if you run to the end of the wild area. And she's like, forget it, Ralph. Once I circle through the woods, I'll lose it. There's no woods here. And he's thinking, once I circle through the woods, I can lose him and get back to the base to free everyone. And, I guess people are being held captive. They get to the top of a ridge and they see something interesting. And the brother's like, run, Hildi, run. And they're like, we got you now. And he's like, wait, Rolf, look. And they're like, what is it? Only one thing's that big. It's Surtur's sword. Yeah, and it is. It's Surtur's sword that's laying there. And somebody has erected this big blue Kirby machine above it. And it looks like it's absorbing energy from the sword. And, you know, they actually figure out what's going on here. It says, it's Surtur's sword, probably laying just where it fell when Surtur and Odin plunged into the great chasm. And somebody's already found it. Somebody's draining energy from it. And only one person would keep its presence here a secret. We've got to get to Heimdall at once. And we cut back to Earth, and Thor is fighting Curse, and he's punching him and throwing Curse into walls and busting up stuff. And Thor is, he knows he's in trouble. He's still weary and weak from his fight in Hell. And he runs to his chariot, where he is keeping his magical belt, the Belt of Strength. And it's, even though I don't use it much, I kind of need it now. And it doubles his own power, but he says that it drains him so severely that when he takes it off, he can barely walk. So, it has a cost to it. So he puts on the magic belt, and then he has At curse again, and starting to get the better of him. And the Beyonder is paying attention to this, and he's kind of hovering overhead. And I have to describe the Beyonder here because he's just too funny for words. The Beyonder is, you know, this omnipotent godlike being, but he's come to Earth in the guise of like this weird 80s stereotype. So he wears like Miami Vice jackets and parachute pants, and he's got this weird 80s perm haircut. He looks really dumb. Anyway, very, very 80s. And then he goes off and explodes into a new universe, which was a real stupid experiment that Marvel did. Anyway, so then he's like, how interesting. Thor may have found a way to neutralize his foe's great strength. And he decides he's going to fuck with Thor more. I think I'd like to know more about Thor's strength of mind. For here is a being not unlike myself, blessed with great power, yet guided by some inner code that enables him to choose between right and wrong. But unlike Curse, his will is being weakened with many conflicting desires raging within him. I'd like to see this fight to the finish, a test to destruction. Therefore, I shall increase Curse's strength to offset the advantage gained by Thor. And he shoots his magenta sort of magical bolt at Curse, and he becomes much stronger, and he starts slamming Thor around, and Thor's like, Odin's blood. Curse seemed to shrug off my last blow as though it were without force. He seems stronger with every passing instant. Could I have truly met an unbeatable foe at last? Thor keeps getting up, but Curse keeps whamming him down, and you have the Beyonder just spying on the whole thing, just kind of wondering what's going on. And then in this picture, in this couple pages, he's got that Superman curlicue in his hair, which, with his kind of 80s curly perm, doesn't look very good. But anyway, he's watching them fight, and you know, Curse is hammering Thor down pretty good, and yeah, Thor's wondering if he's going to die, and Curse gets ready to administer the coup de grace, and all of a sudden there's an interruption as Beta Ray Bill and the Power Pack arrive, and they're here to save the day, apparently, and Massmaster is telling Thor to roll out of the way, and that's Jack, and he goes rolling out of the way as Curse strikes and kind of smashes the ground, and we see that the Beyonder is still watching. And he's thinking to himself, I can read in his mind that he's never met these children before. There's a feeling of family between them that I have yet to understand. And Alex says, quick, Katie, power up. Thor looks like he needs help. So Katie's using her power to dissolve garbage cans and stuff, and she's shooting off all these energy bolts and, you know, kind of shooting them a curse and sending him flying. Thor helps a little bit by vaulting Curse into the way of the power ball. And Curse is like, who tries to rob Curse of his victory? Who? And Alex is like, it is you. You hurt our mom. And we see from Curse's point of view, he doesn't know that he's talking to Alex. He thinks he's talking to Malekith. So he's kind of hallucinating, I guess. He thinks this 12-year-old kid is Malekith. And he hears Malekith is, it is you. Only Algrim can destroy the God of Thunder. I, Malekith the Accursed, have chosen you to do his great and glorious deed. And Curse is distracted by this. And behind him, Thor is getting ready to, you know, like for a big attack with his hammer. And he's trying to generate heat by whirling Mjolnir around. And Curse is feeling something. He's kind of feeling fear of Malekith, who he thinks kind of hallucinating about. It's like, no, not the pit, Malekith, not the pit. I will yet kill Thor. And Malekith's guardsmen, open the pitfall. But what of Algrim? Let him lie in glory forever with the mighty Thor. Spring the trap! And they go falling down. And so Curse has regained his memory. And he's shouting out, Malekith! Not Thor at all, but Malekith! I remember now! I shall find you, Malekith! And I shall find you in wiping the life from you drop by drop for what you did to me. And he's completely forgotten about Thor. Just is completely out of his head. And Thor is realizing that he's a vessel of rage that can only contain one item at a time. Kind of like Ultra Boy. And Curse is kind of going around now looking for Malekith and throwing around cars and stuff. And basically, Beta Ray Bill is keeping the kids safe. Thor runs over to join them. And Beta Ray Bill changes into Beta Ray Thor. So now you have Thor, Beta Ray Bill, the four power kids, and Franklin Richards. They're going to go off after Curse, try to stop him once and for all, but they realize that they need a lot of power. So we have Katie, who's the youngest of the power kids, who basically converts matter into energy, and they have her grab onto Thor and Beta Ray Bill's hammer and she's being charged up. And of course, when she gets really, really, really charged up, then she can shoot these really powerful energy balls out. So that's what they're doing. And they're trying to get the biggest bang possible. And Katie is crying. It's like, oh, it hurts, blah, blah, blah. Releases all of her energy at once and manages to smash Curse with his energy. Which is interesting because, you know, basically Curse was just defeated by like a 5-year-old girl. But anyway, with the giant Schrakt, Curse has a big explosion and he falls down and he's unconscious. And Thor says, it is over. Curse lies still. But there was more to him than even the magic of the Dark Elves could conjure. Something I felt before. Some power that seems beyond anything I have ever known. Of course, beyond anything indeed. Step forth, you who have come from that far distant realm. You who have come from beyond. Thor calls. And the Beyonder goes, poof, appears like, kind of like Q from Star Trek. Though I think this does predate Q by a few years. The Beyonder's like, you don't have to shout. My hearing is excellent. You know, I find you and Beta Ray Bill so much more interesting than Curse. I'm fascinated by the fact that you were quite willing to sacrifice your hammers to stop him. Don't you realize that with the energy drained from your hammers, you have lost nearly all your power? And Thor's like, well, what good is power if it cannot be used to save innocents? What good is power if it creates beings such as this? And he means Curse. Poor creature. Like me, he was whole once, but his fate seems darker. I must remember this lesson. The Beyonder's thinking, so you sense a link of humanity, even with Curse? How wonderful. And Franklin recognizes the Beyonder, says, it's the man from my dream. He's the one who made Curse. And Julie's like, well, he can't be. He helped our mom. And he's like, but he is. Listen. And basically, Beyonder's telling Thor, if Curse is bothering you, just let me send him back to Fairyland. And Thor's like, does that mean he'll die again? And Beyonder's like, probably. There wasn't much of him left when I got a hold of him the first time. And Thor's like, well, why not let him live then, to serve a useful purpose? And he's like, well, what do you have in mind, since I'm not reading your mind? And Thor's like, Curse seeks to find the one who destroyed him. Send him to hell. Malekith is now at large, somewhere in that or a neighboring realm. Why should Malekith not come face to face with his own creation? And the Beyonder's like, I've learned enough about you folks to know that no one but Curse has any one motive for anything they do. Perhaps a little peep into your mind will satisfy my curiosity. And he reads Thor's mind, and he says, ah, I see. You think the curse will make life interesting for the death goddess Hela, and it was she who injured your face so badly. I like that, though I don't quite know why. And Thor's like, it's called irony, Beyonder. I suspect your life is filled with it. And Beyonder's like, huh? How can I, what? And Katie has found the Beyonder saying, I hate you! I hate you! And he's like, why should you hate me, Katie? I took your mommy to the hospital.
Because you made Curse, and Curse hurt mommy. You're a bad man. I wish I could disintegrate you.
And then and the Beyonder's like, well, then you would be just like Curse. And that wouldn't be any good, would it? But maybe doing good is what makes somebody part of a family. That may be just what I'm looking for. Because all the power of the universe can't make you good. You have to choose it. So I guess this is the lesson he learns in this issue. It's just a shame that he took all these valuable lessons and went off and used it to create DP7 and Kickers Incorporated.
So in the future, I shall choose good, but I can choose it for everyone. You and Bill have the right idea, Thor. No sacrifice will be too great. I want to show my appreciation for what I've learned today. That's the family way, isn't it? I don't want to touch your face, Thor, because I like what you said about irony. And if it were fixed, sending Curse to hell wouldn't be ironic. So I've restored your hammer's power. Now you can still have much to sacrifice. I'm off. Adios. And by the way, Thor, I should be wary of kissing any ladies in the near future if I were you. A word to the wise. And Katie's like, what about her mom? And he's gone. And Thor's like, it's too late, Kitty. He's gone.
But it's not fair. It's just not fair.
And Beta Ray Bill chimes in, you're right, child. But it's the living that isn't fair. That may be the hardest lesson of all for anyone to learn.
Or the hardest of all for the Beyonder. How can he learn from his mistakes when he makes his own rules?
Be brave, little one. Your mother's fate has not yet been decided. Now I must go.
And Beta Ray Bill is going to take the children home. And Thor asks Beta Ray Bill,
will you come to Asgard when you've finished? Sif wishes it, and we are about to select a new ruler.
And Beta Ray Bill basically is, yep, I'll be there. And the kids are like,
goodbye, Thor, bye.
And Thor goes and goes to his goats, and basically he's, you know, is taking care of his goats and saying, talking to them, well, Tooth Gnasher, Tooth Grinder, it seems my own question has been answered. My time on Midgard has not been wasted, as well I knew in my heart. Mortals are as much as my family as the gods. Truly, I must be exhausted, but the sight of Asgard rising from her own ashes will renew my spirit. And here's a voice, and here's a woman, says, Thor! Oh, Thor! And he's like, what?
Oh, I'm so glad you haven't gone yet. I saw your fight with that awful creature, and I just wanted to tell you how wonderful you are. You saved us all.
And remember the person who was ironing that Loki zapped with that transmogrifying ray? Yeah, that's who this is. And she reaches for Thor and says,
And wait till I tell the girls I actually kissed you. They'll be so jealous.
And she gives Thor a big old smooch through his red cape rag. And there's a giant foof and a big glow of yellow. And as the smoke clears, she's like, that's funny. What am I doing down here? I was just in the middle of ironing. And we go to Loki in Asgard, and he's basically jumping up and down in glee. And he's like, it worked! It worked! And my little cat's paw has no memory of what happened. The trap is sprung, and Loki has achieved his most brilliant chest. And we cut back to Earth. We see on the ground here next to Thor's chariot, a frog. And he's going, ribbit, ribbit. Next issue, not a hoax, not a dream, not an imaginary story. Thor croaks. And that is Thor number 363. All right, so few things to say about it. Artwork kind of sketchy, but it's a big improvement over what we've been seeing in the Baldur series, isn't it? And like I said, this is the beginning of one of the coolest Thor stories ever. And the story of Thor Frog begins next issue, and therefore in our next episode. And what can I say about this issue? Well, I was never a big fan of the Secret Wars 2 crossovers, I have to say. You know, they all were kind of like this. So that Beyonder would fuck with people, and then he would try to learn some kind of a lesson from each one. And the whole idea is that, you know, he was going to use all these lessons that he learned to create an entire new universe that he would be the god creator of. And that turned out to be this new universe that I mentioned earlier, that Jim Shooter conceived for Marvel's 25th anniversary. And the whole idea was that they were going to have this entire new universe, all new creations, that it was going to be a more realistic universe, more like our own universe, and that, you know, the superheroes were not going to be as fanciful, I guess, and they were going to be more like real universe superheroes would be. And unfortunately, in my opinion, the new universe was basically a bust. Most of the series were really, really stupid. Never liked any of them. There was one good character who basically was, you know, is called the Starbrand, who was basically Green Lantern, and they ended up bringing that character into the Marvel universe at some point. And I think that's the only thing from that universe that actually ever survived. But generally speaking, I really like this story. And again, there's Simonson with his little quirky sense of humor in here. You know, the woman who was ironing, and then she just read the last page, just comes up and gives Thor a smooch, and he changes into a frog. I mean, it's just cool. And Loki actually using his villainy to be more mischievous this time. And it's like, okay, well, you know, Thor can be a frog now. And it's a great story. So looking forward to covering that in the next few episodes. So I'm going to go ahead and wrap this up now. Once again, if you want to contact the show, feel free to do so. And our email address is radiofreeasgard@gmail.com. And you can also contact us on Facebook, like I said. So, yeah, thanks very much for listening. This is Tom Harris in Chicago, Illinois, signing off. We'll see you next week here on Radio Free Asgard.